All right. Welcome. I'm Jeffrey Snover, distinguished engineer and lead architect for Windows Server, and I've got superstar
Travis Jones. I'm a program manager on the Windows PowerShell team. And I think I was joking with Jeffrey earlier. He says he has two titles, and I think that the distinguished engineer is just what they give you once you get a little gray hair.
So. Yeah, that's great. I like that. it's a big title at Microsoft, right? And so when I told it, my daughter, she's young, and she said, she was bragging to her friends saying that now her daddy was an extinguished engineer. I said, no, honey, that's wrong. You got to get that right. Anyway, so we're going to talk to you about PowerShell for beginners. How many people here have been using PowerShell? Okay, well, this is going to be for beginners, okay? So, you know, you might not get all you want out of this. Later on Thursday, we've got a PowerShell, which is for advanced users. This is going to be really for beginners, and we're going to go through a lot of the details of, you know, getting started with PowerShell. So the goals here are to introduce Windows PowerShell to you and learn how to investigate. You know, a lot of this, you know, whether you pick up a book or you go to a training or whatever, that's not as important as learning how to learn PowerShell. And so our real goal here is to teach you how to learn PowerShell, how to explore, and honestly to have fun. Right? PowerShell is a ton of fun to get in there and explore. And now what we're going to do, let me tell you the ground rules here. We're going to show you mostly PowerShell version 2 features using PowerShell version 3. Okay, now we might show you a little bit of PowerShell version 3 here and there, and we'll try and highlight that where we do. But in particular, we're going to be doing so using the PowerShell version 3 integrated scripting environment. And the great thing about the integrated scripting environment is that it's got IntelliSense, and now we've made it so it zooms up, and so you can see it in the back seats. And so it's just a wonderful tool for learning PowerShell. Okay, so again, just to be clear, we're going to largely talk about PowerShell version 2, stuff you can get today, using PowerShell version 3. You can get that today. It's part of the beta. In fact, the ISE that we're showing you, you can't get. You will, but it's from like...
2 days ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This weekend. I installed it from this weekend, which also means I just picked up the nightly build from the weekend. So
it may or may not work.
If you see something strange, that's what's going on there. But you get the latest and greatest stuff. We have two keyboards here confusing me. Okay, so what is Windows PowerShell? Windows PowerShell is, you know, it's both a command line and a scripting language. So if you're used to command line environments, Bash, K-shell, etc. It's like those. If you're used to things like command.exe, it's not like that at all. It's nice. It's a programming language. So if you're familiar, again, in the Unix world, if you're familiar with, you know, Ruby, Perl, Python, things like that, it's like that in the power, but those things are really just sort of incompatible, inconsistent languages from the shells. So you learn one shell, but then when you want to do something more sophisticated, you got to dump all that learning and go pick up something new. And then what you find is you have to dump that and pick up something new, and you just keep learning, learning, learning all the time. Our goal here, right, here's the model. I know you have your hairs on fire, and the last thing you want to do is to stop doing what you're doing and learn something new, right? And so I understand that. We're asking you to stop doing what you're doing and learn something new, learn PowerShell. And I consider this what we call it is the sacred vow. And the sacred vow is that you take the time to learn PowerShell, and we're going to do everything in our power to make that the best investment you ever made in your career, et cetera. So we're going to teach you a small set of things that we're then going to use over and over and over and over and over again. It'll be the best use of your investment. So you can start off simple. And when you have a harder problem, don't have to throw things away. Just learn a little bit more. And when it gets really hard, just learn a little bit more. And this power, this tool, spans from very, very simple beginner admins all the way up to very sophisticated systems programmers. So what that also means is, if you're a beginner learning PowerShell and you see some script that is hideously complex and said, don't freak out. That's okay. Somebody wrote that for you. And then they presented it with high-level task-oriented abstractions, so it's easy for you to use. And it's something you can aspire to learn if and when you ever want to.
Or you can just copy and paste it, like so many of us do.
Indeed. That's exactly correct. Copy and paste is your friend in the world of PowerShell. And the other thing we want to do here is to be production-oriented. You know, I remember starting off in the world of Unix, and one of the tools had exactly one error message, and it was the question mark. And so that was obviously not a model of like trying to help you get your job done. Look, we know you got a lot to do, and it's all about, you know, it really matters whether it works or not. So we're very production-oriented. I'll show you some examples of what I mean when I say these words.
So just a little bit about who's actually using Windows PowerShell. As Jeffrey said, we're on our way to our third release, and we've grown a ton with each release. So is anybody here familiar with the common engineering criteria at Microsoft? Yeah, it's bedtime reading, right? Did we have a hand? Okay. And so what it is a set of requirements that says every single server product that ships out of Microsoft has to have a set of high-level task-oriented commandlets. That's one of the requirements in the common engineering criteria. So now all server products that come out of Microsoft are going to have a bunch of PowerShell. And so where in V1 with Windows Server 8, we had about 130 commandlets and maybe a few for other products. We go all the way up to Windows Server 8, or Windows Server 2012. I owe somebody a quarter, I guess.
Yes.
Where we have Windows Server 2012, and we've got over 2,300 commandlets. So this common engineering criteria, sometimes it's been a carrot and sometimes it's been a stick, but it's significantly improved the coverage we have for PowerShell commandlets. And basically what we do is we'll sit there and we'll look at Server Manager in Windows Server 8 or these other products, and we say, hey, is there something that an IT pro can do in the GUI that he can't script? And if there's anything that we find in there, I mean, we will actually sometimes go out and tell these people that they can't ship until they go and fix that.
Yeah, and in today's State of the Union, the SCCM guys announced that they would be providing full PowerShell coverage for SCCM.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was always, so last year when we would be here, I would always say, hey, we have the common engineering criteria, it's great. And that was the one, everybody would always get me, they'd say, yeah, but what about Config Manager?
Exactly.
That one's gone.
They're sort of like bringing up the rear. So the key thing here is that now PowerShell, you know, it used to be PowerShell was, you know, the leading edge. You know, leading edge people were learning PowerShell. Leading edge was really about 6 years ago. So we're not on the leading edge now. But that said, the folks who were doing it on the leading edge, they had a lot of hard work to do, right? We want to get to a world where you think about what you want to do, you type it, and you get it. And I'll demonstrate how you do that. But when you only had 130 things to do, well, there's only 130 things you could think, type, and get. So those people ended up having to do a lot of scripting, right? A lot of low-level detail stuff. Now that we've got this nice high-level coverage for lots of stuff, the folks coming in now, it's much easier for you. Plus, we've got great coverage. Now, also in this, we've got Windows Server 2012 Server Manager. I don't know if you've seen that. We're showing it on the expo hall. But everything you can do in that tool, you can also do via PowerShell. So indeed, we're layering all of our GUIs on top of PowerShell. So it's an exciting world. By the way, I should be clear on that. It is not an either-or world. Lots of the press love this. You know, always like to talk about a fight or a conflict. And they pit this as a GUI versus command line. We do not see it that way at all. We see it as a GUI and command line world. So when we tell you your preferred configuration for the new version of Server is to not have a GUI on it, that doesn't mean you don't manage it with a GUI. What you do is you put the GUI on the client and use remote management. Okay, so don't let anybody confuse you on that point. Okay, let's get a demo. What are these people talking about?
Cool.
I like it.
Well, that band that was on, that's called Trombone Shorty. Jeffrey and I are both members. So.
Okay, so this is now the PowerShell integrated scripting environment. And this, again, is the version 3. So anybody who used the previous version, we've now combined the input and the output window, makes it much easier. So the key thing here is it's a command line shell, just like you're used to, right? So you're used to being able to type things like Notepad and run Notepad or Calc, right? So all those commands that you used to be able to run, you can still run, but we now have these new things called commandlets, okay? So these commandlets are high-level task-oriented abstractions that are meant to read like an English sentence, okay? It's not trying to understand your language. You have to learn the syntax. But once you learn the syntax, you'll find that you're just able to think about something and type it. So what if I wanted to get all the processes whose name was, get process, there's the IntelliSense, minus name, LSASS. And there, you got that process. Now, here, this is pretty expansive, right? It's verbose. Verbose is great when you're reading a script, right? Someone wrote a script, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, something's gone wrong, and you need to drill into it and find out what's going on. What was that script doing? What went wrong? When you get there and you see this, nice, full words like that, it's very easy to understand your script. So it's very much your friend. However, if you're an interactive user, sometimes it's not as friendly. So what you can do is you only have to provide enough of the parameter to disambiguate, okay? And we have aliases. So instead of get process, I can talk GPS, and we have wildcards. So I can do things like star SS. Okay, so I get the processes whose names end with S star SS, and we have positional parameters. So now GPS star SS. Okay, so there's this nice progression between very pithy. I'm in a command line window. I'm using it for myself. Fast, 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 and I'm writing something that's going to be used and it's going to be formal. So I want it to be more formal. Okay. Okay. So. But what makes PowerShell truly different is objects. Now, some people hear objects and they're like, oh my God, what are you out of your mind? I'm just an admin. I don't want to deal with objects. I'm not a programmer. No, 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 my friends. No. Objects dramatically simplify your life. If you've got a Unix background, you know exactly what I mean when I show it to you. Because in the previous world, in the Linux world, you end up having to do a ton of text parsing to do everything. And in this world, you don't. You get objects, and the objects eliminate the need for text parsing. So let me show you what that means. So imagine I wanted to get all the processes where the handles were greater than 900, right? Get process, pipe to where handles greater than 900, right? And it just works. Okay, well then, that's great. See the first column there, it shows you the handles, but you see that they're not ordered. So imagine you then say, well, hey, I'd like to do that, and I'd like to sort them by handles. Oh, and that's nice. But then imagine you say, well, geez, that's a little bit more information than I want. What I'd like to do is I'd like to format them as a table with the properties, handles, and name, and auto-size it. Okay, so look at what we just did. We were able to say, hey, I'd like to get the processes where the handles are greater than 900, sort them by the handles, format as a table, give the properties, etc. So this is some very powerful stuff, and notice how simple it was. So this is what I mean by this world of think, type, get. And boy, you know what? It just gets better from there. So imagine that in addition to this, I also wanted to find out the company name and the description of those processes. Well, company, and then description, right? Because I can't spell description, and I can spell company, but it's too hard, right? And so here, I guess I only have a couple values there, but what I'm pointing out is that we have wildcards in lots of different places. So in the Unix world, they have wildcards exactly one place, and that's to fill out files. But in Windows, in PowerShell, we have wildcards for lots of different things. So it's very powerful. Okay, let me see if I can get some more here. Just to make that a little bit more impressive. There you go. So it's showing you the company and the description. So really nice stuff, okay? But now imagine I say, hey, I'd like to get the processes where the working set is greater than 5 megabytes, and then group it by company, and then sort it by count. I mean, look at that, right? Found all the processes whose working set was greater than 5 megabytes, grouped by the company and sorted by account. I mean, you can just do like crazy powerful stuff because of objects, okay? Now notice, did you notice that 5 megabytes? Right? Now, you could have said where it's better than da-da-da. You know, here's the question. Is that 5 megabytes? Right? Do I have enough zeros? Who knows? I can't figure that stuff out. Well, PowerShell, we designed it to make it easy for your life, right? So we've got things like 1 kilobyte, 1 megabyte, 1 kilobyte plus 2 megabytes plus 3 gigabytes plus 4 petabytes plus 5 terabytes. Oops. I think I got that wrong. But anyway, I mean, just crazy powerful stuff.
I knew that answer.
You knew that?
Yeah, okay. I knew that.
That's good. Excuse me while I adjust this. Okay. Here, we'll say get disk. Yeah? And we'll say out grid view pass through format table friendly name firmware version. Did I mention I picked up a build this weekend?
Admin.
Pay no attention to that error message. It will work by the time we ship. Anyway, what I wanted to point out was OutGridView.
Hey, I didn't also know IntelliSense works with the operators now. That must be very new.
Yeah, it does. It's awesome. GPS through OutGridView minus pass through from a table name handles minus auto. So, here, it's not just the command line. I'm showing you all the, you know, you can output it to a grid. And then pass-through says, hey, I can select a set of things. And when I say OK, they get passed through and formatted and go on to the rest of the pipeline. So really powerful stuff. Now next, so these are these notions of high-level task-oriented abstractions, where you learn how to the syntax, you learn the verbs, right? We're pretty prescriptive about the verbs. Use stop, don't use kill. You like kill? I don't care. Use stop. You like terminate? More prescriptive? I don't care. Use stop. Why? Because then you're going to learn stop, and when somebody you want to do something, you're going to use the you're going to guess that the word is stop, and you're going to be right. Yeah. That's why we're hardcore about these things. Okay?
We're just as hard. Nouns too, right? Everything is singular and parameter name. So nouns get disk, not get disks. And any parameters, computer name, not computer names, even if they take multiple ones. Again, it's just so. It's always consistent. You don't have to think about it.
Yeah, and it's international, right? So English is weird, right? Get children, get process E's, E-S, get disks, S, get children's.
Childs.
Yeah. So it's always singular. That's what that's about. So then next is, you know, originally we thought about this project. We were going to try and get the Unix tools and get them on Windows, right? And in fact, we did that, right? There was services for Unix, and we made it available freely. But it turned out that didn't work as well as I had expected it to. And the reason why is, well, it turns out that those tools are very tuned to the Unix world, right? Where everything's a text file. And so in that world, awk, grep, sed, those are really systems admin tools. But guess what? When you took those tools and you put it on Windows, grep doesn't work in the registry. Awk doesn't work against WMI, sed doesn't work against Active Directory. So those tools really didn't help us. So what we have is that we have a richer system than those environments, so we needed unique tools, and that's why we ended up inventing PowerShell. Now, to that end, right, we have directories, right? Yeah. But we also have multiple namespaces, right? So we have rich namespaces. So get PS drive. These are showing me all the drives on the system. And notice, you see the traditional drives, right? There's the C drive and the D drive. But look, there's an alias drive, a cert drive, a function drive, HKLM. Yeah, HKLM. So let's investigate. Change directory, HKLM. Software. Microsoft. And when I do a dir, notice it's showing me registry keys. Okay? So what you're able to do is you're able to interact with the different namespaces that we have. Active Directory also has a namespace. You're able to CD into things. You're able to cat things. Let's see, CD to WSMAN. WSMAN. Localhost. Dir. Ooh, you got to be admin. Anyway. You're able to interact with things just like you're able to interact with a file system, but you get the rich objects in and of themselves, right? We don't make everything look like a file. You interact with it like a file, but it doesn't have to look like a file, okay? So then,
I want to talk... quack like a file.
You're bad. Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about is this notion of production-oriented. Remember I said, oh, well, we're production-oriented. That's a little bit different. Well, what's that about?
I had to.
So I mentioned we have wildcards, yeah? So these are actually rich, regular expressions, okay? So I can do things like get process, everything that begins with a D through a T and ends with a G through a Y, yeah? Okay, I'm going to do that, and then pipe that to stop process. And the question is, do I hit carriage return or not? Yeah? Because, like, could be good. Could be good. Could lose my job, right? Buffy and Muffy might not be going to college. It could be bad. And so, you know, you never want a world like that, right? And so what we do is we say, hey, whenever there's something that could have a side effect on the system, right, whenever you're uncertain, you can always do the following. Type minus what if. Yeah, and when you type minus what if, dot. When you type minus what if, we tell you what we would have done, but we don't do it. And you look and you say, oh, well, it's probably a LSASS. Yeah, probably good that you didn't do that. By the way, I once did a demo in Europe, and I was telling you, this is great, and I forgot to type minus what if. Turns out it's really bad to delete LSASS in the middle of a demo. Yeah, just I highly recommend against doing that. So then you say, well, geez, that's almost right, but not quite right. Well, you could go and you could try and tweak that regular expression if you wanted to. Or what you could do is you could say minus confirm. And if you say minus confirm, we ask you, oh, is this one you wanted? And you say, no. Is that the one you wanted? And you could say yes or yes to all or no to all. Or here you could say suspend, and you get a prompt. And you can take a look around, and then when you're done, it goes back to where you were. It suspends the operation so you can investigate, and then you go back. And I'm just going to say no to all. Yay. And this is what I mean by a production-oriented system, right? I know that your job matters. I know that if you get things wrong, it's going to be bad. And we design the system with that in mind, okay? The other thing is, when something goes wrong, you want to know about it, okay? So here, I say stop process, and I'll say 13, 23, 33. These are processes that never exist on Windows. And so I got three errors. And notice what it did was it gave me an error, cannot find 13, cannot find 23, cannot find 33. And the question is, did it do the right thing? Yeah, did it do the right thing? It found an error, and it reported the error and kept going. And the question is that the right thing to do or not? And the real answer is, you know, you can answer yes, you could answer no, you could fight for a long time. The real answer is it depends. And it really depends upon you and your context. Okay, but we had to make a decision, and so we chose one. But we gave you the opportunity to change our mind. Okay, so what you can do here, do it again, and you can say minus error action, and look, you can say ignore, continue, stop, etc. So here we'll say stop, we'll do that action, we go until we find an error, and then we stop. Say, oh, not doing anything more. You could have said, hey, you know, I just don't care, just ignore any error. And there, everything that we did before, the first time, happened, but we just ignored the error messages. We don't show them to you. Or you could say, hey, you know what? I'm busy, and I don't know. It's probably going to be fine, And if it's not, I'm not sure what I'd do anyway. So if something goes wrong, inquire. And there it goes until it finds an error, and then it stops and it says, hey, here's the error, what do you want to do? And you can say, halt, continue, or again, suspend. Take a look at things, and when you're done, go back. Okay, so this is what I meant about a production-oriented system. Of course, we'll halt it here. Yeah? Okay. There you go. That was our short introduction. Okay, so now I mentioned to you this objects, objects, objects. Again, a lot of people get their head all wrapped up around objects. Objects are here to simplify things. I'll give you a very simple explanation for how you should think about objects, okay? Objects, you know, think about a bicycle, right? You have parts and you have ways to use them, right? So a collection, an object is just a collection of these parts and how do you use those parts. And so what we do is, you know, the parts of a bicycle be the front wheel, the back wheel, the pedals, the saddle, this frame. And then how you use them. Well, I'd like to pedal, steer right, steer left, right? It makes pretty much sense. So an object is just a collection of parts and then a collection of how to use those parts. Okay? Well, in terms of an object, we just use different names, right? Instead of parts, we call them properties. And instead of how to use them, we call them methods. And then we do things like imagine a Windows service. So Windows service as an object has parts, has properties, and those are things like the display name, the status, the required services, and it has methods, things like start, stop, pause. It's that simple, okay? So objects make things simple. So when you type something like this, get process where the handles are greater than 500, sort it by the handles, format table, what happens is that goes to a common parser that then dispatches it to the set of commandlets, commandlets being a small command. And what really happens, again, this is really quite sophisticated technology, right? It looks really simple. It looks like, yeah, we've been doing that for the last 30 years. No, 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 my friends. This is some very sophisticated technology. Underneath the covers, we have what is called a data flow engine, or some people would call it a data flow engine. Ours is an object flow engine. And what that means is, instead of these things like in Unix, these would be all different processes. These all run in a single process. And what happens is, we pass control to the first commandlet. It runs until it emits output, objects. Those objects are then passed to the PowerShell pipeline processor. And what it does is it sees the data, and it looks at the data contract, the required data contract of the next guy in the pipeline. And then we do whatever coercion, casting, manipulation, et cetera, shredding, parsing, required to meet that data contract. We pass it on, and then that continues until all the way at the end, you got a really happy admin, right? Why? Because we do all the hard, gnarly work. If you take a look at a lot of scripts, a ton of scripts are all about this impedance mismatch, right? Like, oh, I called something, and I got a string, but that guy needs a daytime. Or I got a daytime and he needs a string. And like, ugh. You have no idea how much of the coding is really all about that level of minutia. And with PowerShell, you don't have to deal with any of that. We deal with that. Why? Because
we should show them.
We should show them.
We should show them.
Why don't you show them?
Yes,
we should. And why do we do this? Again, it's all about this model of think, type, get. We want you to think about what you want, type it, and you get it. We deal with all the crap.
So and Jeffrey showed you objects, and of course, in his short introduction, you did see objects in action, and you probably didn't even realize it. So using those Windows services as an example, I'm going to show you in more detail how to access properties on objects, and then how to call methods on them. And before we wrap up this part of the demo, we're going to also look at some other common data types that you're going to work with in PowerShell. We're going to look at arrays, which are collections of objects. We're going to look at strings and then date time objects, so all things you're going to work with on a daily basis in PowerShell. So PowerShell comes with this commandlet called getService, and it allows us to look at the Windows services on the box. And if I were to say, hey, getService WinRM, I get back an object representing the Windows remote management service on this box. I hope it's not going to kill anything you have planned. I'm going to stop this service.
We'll find out.
So I have this object and I'm able to put it into a variable to make it easy to access the properties and methods. Actually, so I don't know if you didn't show this, but I can actually hit up and down to go back and forth between the commands that I entered, which, hey, I like to be lazy. Hope everybody else does. So I put this in a variable by saying $SVC, and $ is the way that we denote variables in PowerShell. So now that SVC variable has an object representing the Windows Remote Management Service, and I'm able to access the properties on it, like the status. And of course, we can access its name. And what else is showing there? Oh, display name. So all of those things, you just dot and the name of the property that you want to access. But what you don't see here is a ton of richness that's actually built into the Windows service object. So on the screen, you see three fields. They're the ones that we think are reasonable to show you when you're looking at a service. But under the covers, there's just a ton of stuff in there. So for example, if you wanted to know which services had to be started before the Windows Remote Management Service could run, I could look at a property called required services. And that'll tell me, of course, that, hey, the RPC and HTTP services are needed before Windows Remote Management can work. So there's a bunch of stuff in the objects underneath. Also, I don't know if anybody noticed that. I hit tab there, too. So this is really cool. So tab completion and the IntelliSense that's coming up. I don't know if many people have Unix backgrounds. I have a little bit of one. And I still get really excited when I find new ways to do things by typing two or three fewer characters. It's a little bit weird. But the nice thing with PowerShell is, of course, you get to look at this nice verbose required services, and you only have to enter a few characters. So life is good.
By the way, can you see the IntelliSense in the back of the room? Yes, no? Yeah?
Yes.
Because if the answer was no, then I'd show you the feature that you can't get until later. And that is, we could do things like, see? Yeah.
That is nice.
Yeah, make it bigger. So
the geriatric ward, right?
Watch it, bucko.
Remember, he's a distinguished engineer.
Oh. Who participates
I'm not
fired, in calibration.
So I won't be back next year. So anyway, the those are properties, and those are fun, but in your day-to-day work, you probably actually want to do something with that object. So for example, with these Windows services, I could come in and I could say, well, something you might want to do is stop it. And I just couple round brackets on there. And if I go look at the Windows Remote Management Service, no surprise here, you can see that it stopped. And just to make sure our demos will continue to work this week, I will restart that, another method that's on the Windows Remote Management, on the service objects. And of course, that service is now running again.
By the way, it's worth noting here, don't get too hung up on the specifics of the things he's showing you, like how to start and stop a service. Really what we're trying to teach you is how to explore and have fun, right? And so one of the things about, what if, is it helps you explore. Like, go explore the system. Oh, that could be bad. Just type minus what if. So this is how you're going to learn the system, having this just explore and have fun with the system.
Yeah, and you'll break things here and there, but that's the fun part.
Yeah, do it in a VM.
In a VM, yeah. And so those are objects, but now get service, when I specified that I wanted the Windows Remote Management Service, it gave me back a single service. Now if I didn't specify anything, I get back a whole bunch of services. And what that is that's actually an array. Like I said, it's a list of services, a list of objects. So I could say, hey, let's put the array in a variable. And so now this services variable has that list of all of the Windows services. Arrays are objects too, and objects have properties and methods. So I can do something like services.count. And I see that, oh man, there's 170 services on this machine. I wonder what they're all doing. And of course, if I want to access an individual element from there, a particular service, you just use this little square bracket and some number. So the 12th service is the bit service. Maybe the 64th service is the Windows installer. And what's even really neat is if you want to look at just a subset of those, I can do something like 10.20, and I'll get back the 10th through the 20th services. So you can imagine what this looked like in any other language. You'd have to write a for loop and have a variable and count through it and get them in. Again, we really like to allow you to be lazy. Just don't tell your boss.
You know, there's a great story about this last year at TechEd. People come to the booth and they tell us these wonderful stories. Like last night, a guy came to the booth and told me, oh yeah, I learned PowerShell, I love it. This year, a couple weeks ago, I just got my review, got a big raise because of this, because I was so much more productive. It was great. Last year, guy comes to the booth and he says, oh yeah, you know, the boss came in and he said, oh, you know, brought a bunch of us in. He says, you know, we got this crisis. We got to find this information out from all the servers we have and everywhere, and we got to get it by Friday. And so if you got to stay, you know, here all night, you know, do so, call your family, tell them you're not going to see them, whatever it takes, I have to have this done. And we're like, oh, okay, I guess this is really important. And so he goes back to his office and he says, I think about it. It's like, wait a second, I could do that in a PowerShell script. And so he said, 10 minutes later, I had the information he wanted. Then I went and I put it in Excel. 20 minutes later, I had this gorgeous chart. I said, yeah, well, what happened next? He says, I went home. I took the rest of the day off. I came in the morning and showed it to him. I was a hero. But I just love the idea of, I took the rest of the day off.
What else would
you do? He thought
it
was going to take the whole week.
By the way, direct access requires some installation.
Pay no
attention. And so, of course, once I went and said, hey, what was the 12th service? That was bits. And of course, I can come in and access the properties of those services just like I did before when I wasn't working with an array. And all those things just work the exact way that they did before. So those are objects, accessing properties, methods on them, and then arrays, which are collections of objects. The next thing I want to show you is strings.
Actually, should we show them the wonderful V3-ism? Let's show them the V3-ism.
Let's show them. Come on.
Okay. Here, first I'll show you the V2-ism.
Okay, okay. Well, now, you man that one and I'll man this one.
Yeah, okay, so here's the thing. So anybody who raised your hand who said, oh, you've been working with PowerShell, I guarantee you've run into this problem. So imagine I do this, $P equals get process minus name, and here what I'll do, by the way, the advanced PowerShell thing, wherever you're going to do something, you can run a command. You can put another command within parentheses, and we run that one first, and we take whatever output it is, output of that command, and we plunk it into the other command. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say read host name minus prompt name, okay? And so then it's going to prompt me for a name. I'm going to give a name, and it's then going to plunk that into that value, and now I've got $P, right? And I say $P dot get type, and you see it's a process object, and so then I can say $P dot name, yeah? And happy, happy, right? Great stuff, right? Just as you'd expect. But what if instead of typing LSASS, I've typed *SS. Okay? Now, when I come up here and I say p.getType, instead of getting a process, I get an array. And because it's an array, when I ask for the name, it says, what are you talking about? Okay? And so this was the conflict. We had this conflict between a singleton and an array. Additionally, in this world, so I don't have name, and but I do have $p.p0.name. I get that. And I could say p.count. I have those. So you could say, well, what happens if, again, I do this and I say LSASS, and I try and treat it like an array. And I get the name. It says, no, you can't index into that. And I get the count, and it says, what are you talking about? So this was always a headache, and you always had to deal with that. Now, the way you deal with that was you always, there was a technique. We're not going to show you the technique. We're going to show you how wonderful V3 is, because we solved that.
Yes.
Please.
Absolutely. And I won't go through all of the full example, but if I had get process *SS, and of course I don't know what's in here. I just said get something. I don't know how many came back. I can do count, and there's four. But I could actually just say name, and well, we infer that you must have meant you really want the names of the things that are in that array, those processes. And if I did p is get process lsass, again, I don't remember, is it one, is it many? If I do p.count, whoa. Hey, that's there, p.count is there. P.name works. And if I did something silly like p0, that name, again, there was no reason why we couldn't. We knew there was only one. We just treat those scalar values of single objects just like we do arrays, and again, you get to be lazy.
Yeah, so we dramatically simplified things for, you know, again, there's benefit to coming in the middle. That's just one of the benefits. You get to the benefit of that.
So strings, yes.
Strings.
Strings are, of course, a very easy data type to work with. All you do is wrap something in quotes. So I could say, hey, are we having fun yet? And those quotes mean that this is a string. And a string, of course, being an object, you might get the point, it has properties and it has methods on it. So a string has things like the length, which tells me that this string is 22 characters long. Some methods I might want to perform on here are to upper. So I might ask, are we having fun yet? and I might just want to get the words, so I might go and split. And even with IntelliSense, I can't type. I'm hopeless. So I might split on the words, so split on spaces. I get back all of the words there. I could do something like contains fun, and it'll say, hey, does that string contain the word fun? Of course it does. I could come in and say, does it contain Jeffrey? Does not. It's unfortunate. Normally, fun and Jeffrey come hand in hand. I'm working my way back.
That's good. It's good.
The split, yeah, that wasn't right. Those were, yep.
Show them. That's a great question. So we explore.
So it's an array of strings. So each of those things came back, yep. And, okay, so contains, and of course I can do something like string.replace, and I'll say, hey, if you're not having fun, then I at least hope you're having a reasonable time. And so where a sentence becomes, are we having a reasonable time yet? So strings, hey, they're easy. There's all kinds of properties and methods on there that you can work with. So you can actually run, IntelliSense will show you all the things that you can do, ton of stuff. So let's move on to dates, another very common object type in PowerShell. And of course we ship with the command called getDate, just gives us back the current date time, and I can store that in a variable. I think that people will get this, yes. Remember Jeffrey said, hey, we deal with objects. If you were to look at what this would be in Unix if you had to do some text parsing, oh man, so if you wanted the day, it was like, okay, well that's the thing that's before the first comma, the next thing is the month, and then after a space, but before the next comma is the day. And after that's so you can imagine that that's not really something that's a lot of fun. So of course the beauty about objects is that we have properties on here. So I can say, what day of week is it? Well, it's Tuesday. Or what was the year?
You want to see a great one? So one of the jokes is, right, you know, we're going in and said, hey, watch it, or I'll replace you with a single line PowerShell script. Well, it turns out, that I can replace our marketing department with a single line PowerShell script.
Oh, that was good.
Oh, I like that.
So those properties on dates that make them really easy to work with, and of course there's methods on there. So if you're wondering, hey, what's going to be in a few days? I can say, hey, what's 10 days from now? The .addDays method. So 10 days from now is Friday, April 27th, I guess. And here's a little known fact. Was we actually, so we have a flux capacitor back in Redmond, and if you want to travel back in time, You can do d.add days, minus 10, and we see that 10 days ago it was April 7th. So, do you want to show us how long till Christmas?
I do. This is my favorite. My daughter, she's like fixated, she went through this phase, fixated with Christmas, and she's like, how long till Christmas? Like 360 days, you know, it's just like constantly. And so finally I wrote her this, right? So I wrote this function, days till Xmas. And the answer was, let's see, so what is this? Date, time, and what do we got? 12,
I think 25. It's the
25th. Yeah, exactly. Watch it. Okay. Oh. So then when she'd ask me, I'd tell her how many milliseconds it was. And I put it on her desk. She loves it. Her desktop. She loves it.
That's great.
Honey, it's only 4,000 milliseconds.
Where is our deck, I guess?
First one.
We're on our way there. Okay. So that was objects, arrays, strings, dates, and some jokes, I guess, too. So some things that are here to help you out, a ton of resources while you're learning PowerShell. Of course, there's help content, where we have a really great getting started guide, which is a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here. It's online, you can go read it later. That's a nice handy thing. One of the other really awesome things is these about topics. Oh, and I'll show them after because it's too much work to switch machines. But about topics describe concepts in PowerShell.
You push a button, how hard can
what?
That be?
What?
You push a button, how hard? It's too hard to switch machines?
I'm from the millennial, I'm the, you know, just.
Oh my God.
So, about topics, I'm sorry. Yeah, if I were to come in and say, get help about a star, there's like 100 of these things, and they describe concepts that are in PowerShell. So I was showing you variables, and there's a thing here called about variables. And if I were to go and look at get help about variables, all kinds of information in here, just concepts on how to use variables, the different saving them, different types, how they're scoped, so all kinds of stuff that, I think when I first started learning PowerShell, and it took me a few weeks to find about topics that they even existed, but then when I finally did find them, I probably spent another few weeks doing nothing but reading them. So they're incredibly helpful to describe all the...
You know, if you need some more help there.
All of the concepts in PowerShell. I got this one. And of course, like the about topics, all of the commandlets that we ship have very, very detailed help, and we'll show you those. And the PowerShell ISE's got a great help. There's a bunch of discovery utilities and books. Let's see if this will actually launch. Woohoo! So, 430 books on Amazon. And when Jeffrey and I did this session last year, I think there was about 320. So there's 110 books that have shipped in the last year on PowerShell, which makes up about 25% of the published titles. And this is actually a great book here, too. This Don Jones learned PowerShell in a month of...
Yeah, I've heard very good things about that for beginners. And also, I just love Don's approach. Don gives talks here. He's great. And just his approach, like a month of lunches. Just take an hour, take your lunch hour for a month, and you're going to be doing great. That's a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the community. And so PowerShell, one of the things we always say is, if you want to be successful in PowerShell, you have to become a member of the community. And we've got an incredibly great, strong MVP program. One of our MVPs is sitting right up here. And there's about 53, 54 of them. And these guys are available to help you out online all the time whenever you need help. Many of them are very active on Twitter. They write blogs. They're on the TechNet forums. So if you have a problem, get out there and go ask a question of them. And 24 hours a day, normally within a few minutes, you'll have an answer to your question. Yeah. But of course, our request to you is that, you know, while you're learning, go and use that. But once you know a little bit, go out there and help somebody else. Remember what it was like while you were learning. So the PowerShell community is an incredibly vibrant place. And lastly, of course, practice ad hoc development, which really just hack. When you sit there, you get a VM and just play around. You can't hurt yourself too bad. It's the way you're going to learn. So, whoa, discover utilities. So, again, so as part of is while you're online, the online community is there and helpful. But if you're anything like me, you get a new tool and you're thinking, hey, you know, what can I do with this? I want to go play around. Like I said, Travis told you to go hack, so you should go hack. These are the things you want to go look at. There's a set of commandlets that will really help you explore the system. We have the get help command, which of course gives you the help for a specific commandlet. There's get command that tells you all of the commandlets that are available to you. Show command, which is a new V3, another of our teasers here. We'll give you a nice little GUI form to fill out to run a commandlet if you're still a little unfamiliar or uncomfortable with the command line. Get member will show you all of the properties and methods on an object. So of services, you could have said get member and you see that it had those names, required services and everything. And then get PS drive and get module, which I'll just skim over them quickly, I think. So
need some help?
I got it.
Okay.
Do dance. So demos on discovery utilities. Of course, what day is it? It's Tuesday. So you know, in the 3 days when you spend here in Vegas, the next 3 days, and get yourself into whatever trouble and can't remember anything we said, the one thing I want you to do when you go home is type get member, and then I want you to hit enter. Oh, no, sorry, get command. Duh, I knew that. And I want you to run every single one of those. No, but actually what I think you should do is sit there and say, hey, no, Jeffrey and Travis, they talk to us a lot about services. So get command where service. And that'll tell you the things that you can do with services. Maybe I want to filter so it's only PowerShell commandlets. And you see get service, restart, resume, set, start. In a similar vein, you might say, hey, what are the things that I can do with processes? Or maybe even I want to do something with ECLs. So all this thing, this is what Jeffrey was talking about with a think type get module or model that we like to create for IT pros. Anytime you're sitting in a machine, you're wondering, hey, can I do something with that? You sit down, you think about it, you type it here, and you get it. So if you're at a server that had, let's say, operations manager on it, you could type get command star management pack, and you'll get back a list of all the things you can do in PowerShell with management packs. Pretty cool stuff, right? So once you, let's take a look at the other way that you can look at.
Can I show them once?
Yeah, something? Sure.
So now, this is a V3-ism. So we had this, but now imagine you said, well, like I know that if a command does its own remoting, right, PowerShell does its remoting, we're going to talk about that in the advanced talk, but some of the commands have do their own remoting, and when they do that, they use the minus computer name. So X on computer name. So you might want to find all the commands that do that. And so you can do that now. So you can say get command minus parameter name, computer name. And these show you all the commandlets that have a computer name parameter on it.
Oh, yeah. And remember, we said we get quite vigilant about being consistent with parameters and verbs. So this actually works.
Exactly. Then there are things like, remember here I did get process pipe to stop process, okay? So what happens there is we get something, get process creates this system diagnostic process object. And then it can pipe to this, that other command accepts one of those. So you might ask the question, well, what commands can accept those things? And so you say get command minus parameter type, and here you give it system.diagnostics.process. You give it this, and this shows you all the commands that accept a parameter of that type. So this lets you say, oh, I got one of these. How do I pipe it to one of those? Or what can I pipe it to? Very powerful
That's
stuff.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. V3.
And IntelliSense on the types. That was cool.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep, so he's asking, hey, can I extend this with my own stuff so I don't have to go find all my stuff? And the answer is absolutely. We've got a number of different ways to do it. The preferred way in starting with PowerShell version 2 is something called a module. A module is basically a collection of all the functions that you have in a file, and it goes in a well-defined directory, and then you import that module, and you can access all your functions. In PowerShell version 3, you don't even need to import it. You just access the type that you want. We find it for you, and it auto-import it for you. Yep.
So we just showed you get command, which was the V2 way. And, of course, the V3 way, which is really fun, is the show command, which is this nice little form over here where if I was saying, it's also, it can pop up if I were using the regular PowerShell window. Show command will give me the same form. So it's available everywhere. I could come in here and have done the same thing, said things that work with services or things that work with processes. And now when I found, hey, I wanted to get process, well, I'll select one of those things. And again, I get that nice little GUI form. So if you're still a little timid and you don't really want to get into the blue and white screen.
But actually, check this out, because it's a great exploration tool. So let's start a process here so we know, find one, calc. Okay. So here, so you see you can specify computer name, name of the process, calc, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I want to run it, great. But notice here, I can say module. And when I run that, it shows me all the DLLs in that for that process. Or I can say, well, okay, well, what about file version info? And it says, oh, well, here's where the file product and file version is. So the show command makes it easy to find a lot of the rich capabilities that have always been there, but you know, you sort of didn't know about them.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly. Just find the commands, enter stuff, and play around. So that's show command. Also, if I were...
By the way, I do that on my lunch break because we now have 2,400 commandlets, right? So the surface is vast. And I do. I'll sit there at my desk at lunch, and I'll be just using this to look and like, oh, what do we add? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So, I mean, so when we're talking... This is a beginner session. We're talking about get help, get command, get module. And you think, okay, well, those are discovery utilities. But, Jeffrey, how many times do you use those three commands in any given day?
Zillions.
Yeah, and he
constantly
created it, so I mean, just accept your fate and say that you're going to use those commands as well. So, so once I had actually, let's take a look. Okay, let's do help. So we found our command, get process, and we weren't sure how to run it. Let me hide this thing for now. So I just say get help, get process. You have help on here, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Woo. And of course, I get a list of, you know, this syntax shows me all the parameters, or those were all the things that were shown in the GUI with show command, the description of what this thing does. And if you look down here, you can see there's some other options you can give. So you could say get help, get process online, and you'll get a nice TechNet page with the latest help content on there. Or you could do something like get help full, and whoa, that's a lot of data. You get a whole bunch of examples. You get a whole bunch of information on all the properties, so you can look at this and say, okay, the computer name parameter, this is how you use it. So all of this information is here on the box for you to go look at.
How do you paginate that?
Pardon me?
How do you paginate that?
Oh, you can pipe to more.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, it doesn't work in the IIC. Yep.
You forgot full.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, we have pagination. But that's also showing that help.
Yeah, and so if I didn't want to actually do get help, and I knew, okay, I was typing get process, one of the nice new things about the ISC in Windows PowerShell 3.0 is my cursor is here on the get process command. All I have to do is hit F1, and then I get this really whiz-bang little form up here with all of the info on it, and that's better than pagination, I think.
Yeah, that's the one you wanted.
Where I can then do a little search. I could say, show me the computer stuff, and it's really easy to navigate and find help on here. I see somebody shaking his head. I think that's good, but... So new help in the ISE is really great.
Now, back to this theme of exploration and having fun. So last night I was exploring, and because right, we've really gone big in this release, so there's a lot of features. And I said, hey, Travis, did you know about this? And right before, he said, no. So get this. So just as you can type, you clicked here and hit F1 to get help. Now there's this new icon. You click somewhere. Where are we? Click on the command, and you do this. And it brings up show command for that commandlet. So there's a lot to explore.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be teaching us stuff in a couple weeks.
That's always fun. There's always something somebody else doesn't know. So the get help, get command. Let's just take a look at get member, and we should probably start moving. So get member, once I have an object back, and you're wondering, hey, what are all the properties and methods on it? It's a new thing. I've never really seen it before. You can pipe that to this command called get member, and it will tell you, hey, here are all the methods and all the properties on it. This is the string. So remember we ran a few methods on strings. Well, there's a whole slew of them. You can go look at it there. And alternatively, of course, our preferred method now with V3 is if you're saying string dot and all it with IntelliSense, the properties have this little square icon and the methods all that the purple icon there. So that's the great way to explore objects that you get back from a command that you might not be familiar with how to work.
Yeah. Now, a lot of what you're seeing here, you might be sitting there saying, whoa, that's a lot to learn. Okay? Here's the reality. Here's how most of you are going to learn PowerShell. There's now a new download called the Script Explorer. Okay? And so you'll download the system, and what it is, it's a search engine for scripts, right? And so you go in here, you can browse categories, right? So here's some scripts on hardware. Right? And so you go and you say, oh, get the hardware profile. And then you'll see here, let's see. Let me do a search. Or you can do a search. Let me search on Hyper-V. And you'll say, oh, sample PowerShell profile. Not sure why that's Hyper-V. But you see all these details. And then what you'll do is you'll copy it, accept the terms. Paste it in here. Oops, paste it in here. Hope I didn't do anything bad there. And voila. And then you'll go explore that thing, right? And as you see something like, oh, well, new variable, what's that? And you'll hit F1 to understand what that is. And so you'll go, there's some problem you're going to want to solve. And what you want to do is you want to use the Script Explorer to search for scripts like it, and use those to understand, tweak them to be, you know, to do, solve your problem, then drill into them to see how they explore things. You'll learn techniques. That's really how you're going to, you know, best learn PowerShell, is to solve real problems. And borrowing other people's scripts is a great way to do it. Contributing your scripts back to the community then continues to feed that cycle.
We should probably just move on. Yeah.
All right.
And I think this is you.
Okay, so there's a reason why we call them commandlets. Commandlets. They're small commands, okay? So this whole project started when I had this deep rethink of the Unix model. How many of you are familiar with Unix? Okay, a bunch of you. So in Unix, right, the essence of a Unix composable system is A piped to B piped to C. And I asked myself, well, why do they do that? And the answer came to me, well, because A doesn't do what you want it to do. If it did, you just type A. At some point, that was like a duh. But then I said, well, why doesn't A do what you want it to do? Now, the traditional Unix answer is, that's the model. Each command does a small function, and then you compose them together to solve bigger problems. That's a great answer. But there's another answer. And the other answer is the heart of PowerShell. The reason why A doesn't do what you want it to do is that it tightly couples three separate steps into one. A gets a set of objects, it processes those objects, and it outputs those objects as text. So seen that way, when you say A doesn't do what you want it to do, what you're really saying is, I didn't get the objects I wanted, or I didn't process them the way I wanted, or I didn't output them as text the way I wanted. So when you pipeline it to B and to C, what you're really doing is you're using text parsing to try and reverse engineer your way back to the original objects to do one of those steps differently. And what I said was, no, just put the pipeline at the objects. And you only output text when you want text. And that dramatically simplifies things. And that's why we call them commandlets, okay, because they're small. And in particular, the processing. Okay, let me show you modern Unix. Right? People think Unix, oh, it's small, it's light. This is the man page for PS to get the processes. Look at this thing, okay? So here are the switches to get process selection. Okay, here are those for to get them by a list. Then, if you want to control the format, here's a list. If you want to modify the output, here's a list. And if you want to control the thread display, here's a list. So these commands are monsters. Why? Because it turns out this piping it to B and C, et cetera, is hard. And so what you see in the Unix community is they're trying to take more on that and make the commandlets richer and richer and richer. So now the question is, what does the dash L option mean in Unix? And the answer is, who knows? It's different for every commandlet. So what we do is, so take a look at those functions. They're things like processing objects, filtering, formatting, and what we do is we have a common way to do that. They work across every single object, no matter what. So we can compare objects, we can group them, we can do for each, we can measure them, we can select them, we can T them, we can format them, we can where them. There's a lot here, there's a lot of exploration. Let me just show you a couple things. My favorite is where. You're going to use where a lot, so it's important to understand where. Okay? So originally, we started off with where the vision was SQL. I want SQL against objects. We went down that path for about 3 months. Turns out SQL's hard. Turns out there's a reason why they got a couple hundred guys working on it. It's really, really hard. So we threw that all away, and we replaced SQL with 3 lines of code. Yeah, really, 3 lines of code. Here's what we do. We have where, it takes a script block. We take the input object, we assign it to a variable called $_underbar. We then execute the script block, and if it evaluates to true, we pass the object on, and if it doesn't evaluate to true, we don't. 3 lines of code, literally. That's it. So, don't believe me. Here, let me show you. Get process, pipe to where, $_underbar, right, remember, greater than 500. So for each object, For each object, we assign it to $_underbar, evaluate that expression. If it's true, we pass it on. If it's false, we don't. Okay? Now, notice I didn't say that the expression had to do anything with $_underbar. Okay? So I could have said $true. If the expression evaluates to true, pass it on. So that's all the commandlets. If it evaluates to false, don't pass it on. Okay? So it's that simple. So what that means is that expression, typically when you see a where, you see an expression where the $_underbar handles equals this or name like that, etc. It doesn't have to be that. You can have an entire script. You can prompt the user for questions. You can ask anything you want. Here, let's do one. GPS *S where read host minus prompt. Do you want this one? Let's see if that works. Do you want that one? Yes. Do you want this one? Yes. Do you want that one? No. No. Okay? So you can do anything you want in where. Where is extremely powerful and lots of fun. So then we have groupings, right? So groupings, I can say, hey, get service. Let's just say A star. And I see I have status. So what I could do is I could say, hey, get service and group them by status. Group, if you can spell group correctly, group them by status. Okay, so we see we've got 73 running things and 91 not running. Here, let's see, where am I? I can do Windows. This might take a second. I'll do dir.star minus recurse minus error action, because this fails a bunch. Error action, ignore, and group by extension, OVA sort count. So now what I've done is I've gone into the Windows directory, and I'm finding everything. Oop, you know what? I did the wrong thing here. That's going to take forever. because notice here, this group, it has all the objects. Okay? So what I would have done was I would have gotten a data structure containing all the objects, and that's a bit much. So what I do is I say no element. So that will do this, and it won't collect the objects. It just does just collects the properties. And so what it's doing is it's finding all the files, and it's recursively finding out which the grouping them by extension. That probably should have timed that one. It's wonderful. Pay no attention to how long it takes. Anyway, so I'm going to pass on that. So we have lots of wonderful object commandlets to explore. In addition to object commandlets, these utilities, we have formatting. And here, there's a difference between formatting and outputting, right? You can format things as custom, as lists, as tables, or as wide, and then you can output them. You can output them to files, grid view, host, printer, strings.
CSV.
Well, then that's not an output. Those are import and export. Then we have a number of data transformations. You can take these objects and you can transform them to CSV or to XML. You can convert them to HTML, et cetera. This is our last demo, and then we'll take a few Q&A. Okay?
I need help on that one, remember?
Yep. Could be noted.
So every single object in PowerShell has a default formatter. As we've seen when we run get process or get service, we always see them. We've decided that, hey, tables are a really good way to represent it just based on what data is in there. So those formatting commandlets that we have, format table, format list, I can send the output from any command to it. Let's actually shorten the results set here. There we go.
Yeah.
If I were to pass that to format table, of course, nothing happened because by default, tables are the formatting that we have. But I could also go and say, don't send that to format table. I actually want to view that in a list. Maybe I have some longer strings. And so, again, we've decided that maybe these are the four properties that we want to show you when you format it processes as a list. But what's nice is that, again, we always give you, we try to infer what you want and the most useful thing, but we always give you an escape hatch, a way to go and change that. So if I wanted to do a format table and I only wanted the ID, name, and handles, then I can just specify those, and I only get those back. And similarly, if I wanted to do ID and name with format list, I can get just those back. So again, so the objects, right at the last minute, right before we show them the screen, we convert them to formatting objects based on what you asked for, and then we display those. Again, it's not strings. It's just a formatting object. And so format wide, if I wanted to look at maybe all of the processes and just take a quick scan at what was on there, that was okay. But I could add column 5, and I get a nice glanceable view of all of the processes on this machine. So I could just do a quick scan on those. So that's the formatting, formatting table, list, wide. You can specify whatever properties you want on there. And so let's take a look at the output. If I wanted to do a list of processes, and where am I? Windows? I probably don't want to do it there, huh?
No. No.
Just here. All right.
Temp.
So if I had the list of processes, and I pipe to this out file commandlet, I call that procs.txt. I have a text file with a list of processes just formatted as a table. And you know that would have been a fair bit of code if I actually had to write something that created files. So all that goes away. But what's nice is I can also, so another format is a more meaningful format maybe for you in your environment is CSV. So you might have a batch system that needs to take in a CSV file, and so I could just as easily have said get process, export CSV, and to something called procs.csv. And instantly, I have this nice, and of course Excel can open up things in CSV. So I can open this up, I can filter, I can sort, I can send it off to my colleague and tell him, hey, here's the list of things. Again, with just a single line of code, that was really easy to do.
Boy, can I interrupt and show them the freakiest thing? Yeah. So look, we snapshotted all the processes in CSV, right? So I can do import CSV, that's prox, and I can bring it back, okay? But now, remember I was talking about objects and how powerful they are, and now how you can learn the set of things to work against any object. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say compare object, and I'm going to import these. And first I'm going to do is start two processes, calc and notepad. Okay? Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a compare object of import CSV versus get process. Okay? And I'm going to compare them based upon the property name. And you see these arrows showing you that when getProcess had calc, conhost, Excel, and notepad, and back here we had a search that was going on in the background. So here what I did was I compared live objects against a CSV file based upon properties. So this is crazy powerful stuff.
Otherwise, you'd be looking left, right. Was that there? Tick, print it off. Maybe put an X next to the ones that were there.
Yeah.
And then I get our last demo is, of course, converting things to HTML. And this is always my favorite because I think Jeffrey's told me this story where there was a guy who said, I love PowerShell. I had this script that was 700 lines long. And basically all it was really generating HTML files. And he's like, all these tags, you can picture this script in your head. You know exactly what it looks like. And so with PowerShell, of course, that becomes a one-liner. And we love one-liner. So I'll get the processes. I'll select the ID, name, handles, convert to HTML. That's where you get rid of most of your work. And I'll put the host name in the header. And I'll put the date in there as well. And I will spit that out to a file called prox.html. And if I typed all of that right, then, I end up with a nice little web report, a little web page, so table has the info I need. And I did that with one line instead of 700, so I get to see my family a little more often, I guess.
Exactly. So there's a ton here, right? And really what we wanted to do was to not in this session give you, how to work with processes or how to work with services. You'll figure that stuff out on yourself. What we wanted to do was to teach you some of the basics and the basics for how to learn PowerShell, how to explore, and really how to have fun. So I encourage you to do that. Participate in the community. Grab some scripts, change them, use them, share them. And we have time for a few questions. When does it ship? Okay, so PowerShell version 2 has been shipping for a while, and it's available down level as well. PowerShell version 3 ships with Windows 8, date to be determined. Yeah. No, Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012, and we don't have a ship date for that, but given the name 2012, you can guess the last point at which it'll ship. And when we ship it in the OS, we'll also ship it down level. You can get that available today. It's called the Windows Management Framework 3.0, and it'll ship on 2008 R2, 2008, and Windows 7. Yes, sir.
Yes, in this ISE, can you have a module, let's say you're working on it, and you want to get some immediate feedback, you want to execute that? Is there a way to do that?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yep, what you can do is you can highlight portions of the module and hit F8 and it'll execute the highlighted portions, or you can hit F5 and we'll execute the whole thing. You bet. And you can set breakpoints, you can hover over variables and get tooltips with the values. Party on.
And so the download for Windows Management Framework's on our blog.
Yeah? Cool. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Windows Server 8, I assume, but I just want to ask it. PowerShell 3.0, that's going to be part of WinPE. It's going to be part of Server Core, Hyper-V, all the way through everything.
Yeah, it's now on by default. Now, so the question was, Windows 2008 R2, Windows 8, the client, PowerShell's on by default. Windows Server 2012, it's in all SKUs on by default.
And it works with WinPE now, too, actually. So there's another point. With V3, it works with WinPE.
It's on by default on WinPE.
No, it's an optional feature on WinPE. You got to install it.
Okay.
And remoting is enabled. Did you mention that?
Yeah. So in the past, we had remoting. You had to enable remoting. Now, PowerShell remoting is on by default.
And I assume in a later session you talk about serialization between PowerShell instances on multiple hosts.
I don't know if we do.
Kind of
abstracted
and kind of magic.
We can.
Or stop by the PowerShell booth in the expo.
Yeah, we're at the booth. We love talking to folks, showing lots of things. So thank you very much for your time. I hope you appreciated it. Cheers.
Thanks.